I would like to remind you that for more Microsoft webcasts, you can go to microsoft.com/webcast. Thanks again for joining us for today's presentation, MSDN Webcast Geek Speak, Cloud Services 101. Now it is my pleasure to introduce today's first presenter, Lynn. Lynn, you now have the floor.
Thank you very much. Well, welcome to all of our guests listening in today for Geek Speak. We're really excited to have Aaron Sconard on, and we'll be introducing him in just a couple minutes. But before we get started, I'll let you know who's going to be working with me today, moderating the question queue. If you've never listened into a Geek Speak before, this is a little bit different type of an MSDN webcast for those of you who might be new. Rather than being slide and presentation driven, this webcast is driven more by your questions. So please, at any time, if you have a question about the topic at hand, type it into the queue, and we'll pass it over to Aaron. He does have some demos and things to show us as well, but this is a non-PowerPoint type of environment. So here we've got Lindsay working with me. Lindsay is my counterpart out from the Philadelphia area. So welcome to Lindsay. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing, Lynn?
I am super, and you want to know why?
Why?
Because I finally finished my second technical book.
Oh, that's awesome. I know you've been working really hard on that and it's kind of consumed your life for the past few months. So.
It has. Woo-hoo. I noticed some of the regular listeners back on Geek Speak, you guys have been sending me mail saying, are you ever coming back to co-host? Well, my book is done and I'm back and we're back up to weekly shows and we're really, really excited about it. So anyway, Lindsay, what's going on in your geography these days?
Well, we're pretty busy getting ready for the MSDN developer conferences that are happening all over the U.S. There are 12 over the U.S., but we have two kind of in my geography in Washington, D.C. and New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be speaking at those, and we're getting all the speakers and all the content. I'm ready right now. So if anybody's in that area, you can head out to msdndevcon.com, which really will makes sense in light of today's topic. I will be talking about a lot of the material that was covered at the professional developers conferences that Aaron is going to be speaking about.
Great.
In terms of cloud computing. Cloud computing. So we'll be continuing the conversation at the MDC.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Aaron, let's bring him on. We're really excited today to have Aaron Sconard on from Pluralsight, who was at the PDC. Probably presenting at the PDC. I don't know. It seems like I've seen Aaron around and presenting quite a few places, and we're excited to have him on. So welcome to Aaron. If you want to kind of greet everybody and tell everybody a little bit about your background and your connection to today's topic.
Thanks, Lynn. Yeah, it's good to be here. Excited to be part of Geek Speak. First time doing this show, so this is gonna be fun. No slides. That's the part I love the best. I'm tired of all the slide-based presentations these days. But so it's going to be a lot of fun, do some demos, talk about cloud computing. Just to tell you a little bit about me, I'm with Pluralsight, one of the founders of the company. And, you know, we do software developer training, a lot of .NET-specific training courses and events. But more recently, one of the things we've done is we just released a new online training service for developers where you can actually log on to our website and get access to all of our Pluralsight courses in an on-demand format.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
That's been keeping me quite busy lately. And,
oh.
Just released that at PDC, actually, in TechEdemia.
Great. Well, we'll make sure that we put a link to that, your site, and also any other resources that we talk about during today's show up on our GeekSpeak MSDN blog. Again, for those of you who might be new to the format, because we cover so much ground in these hours, when we get to additional resources, we post them up on the blog along with the recording of the show. So if you find it to be useful, you can share it out, listen to it again, and so on and so forth.
Very cool.
And yeah, you know, Aaron, I thought I should share with you that in honor of today's event, and even though you can't see me, I am wearing a Pluralsight T-shirt.
Oh, which one?
It's the one, the black one with the big eye.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
Yep.
We've had lots of fun shirts recently. We gave out a bunch of PDC. My favorite one is the REST shirt, which says, Real Web Services Use URIs, and it has a URI template on the front that says that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of hard to visualize, but it's a very popular shirt these days. So I'd love to get you one. If you send me your snail mail address, I'll mail you one.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You're going to get a lot of mail, I think, there. So today we want to talk about the cloud. So one of the big announcements at the Professional Developers Conference recently was Microsoft's move into cloud world, officially called Windows Azure. A little interesting tidbit is we actually had a fake code name because nobody was, we were just under wraps to not put out the actual name of the product. So they actually had a fake code name even internally, which I thought was a little fun bit of trivia. So even none of us would know the exact name of Windows Azure until the PDC. So what is this cloud? Why do our developers care?
Yeah,
how they get into it?
And by the way, on the codename thing, I mean, I have never seen Microsoft keep such a good secret. until the morning of the PDC when Riazi announced it.
It was hilarious.
Completely quiet. I mean, usually I can squeeze stuff out of people like that, but man, it was good this time.
Yeah.
So, Azure, Windows Azure or Azure. I'm not sure the right way to say it anymore because, you know, during the keynote it was funny, you know, Riazi got up there and said, you know, Windows Azure, the big announcement was made, and then shortly after the Brit gets up there doing the demo with the little Bluehoo guys or
yep.
And then he says Windows Azure.
Yeah.
And
well,
from that point on, during PDC, everyone was calling it Windows Azure. So.
Well, see, I grew up in Australia, and I've always said Azure is the color.
Right.
But, you know, it's a U.S. thing, so I don't know. I just, you know, throw it to the wind and I say Azure because I've always said it that way.
Yeah. So I'm not sure the right way to say it, but Ray Ozzie said Windows Azure, so that's what I'll say.
Yeah, I'm going with Ray.
Okay.
So Windows Azure is this big thing, which is basically Windows on the cloud. I think that's the easiest way to say it. And in terms of the cloud itself, what is the cloud? It's basically a place to run your applications on someone else's data center. The idea is you can just stick your stuff up there in the sky on someone else's machines, let them manage them, let them, you know, pay for all the infrastructure, let them deal with the complexities on the IT side, and you just basically get computation cycles and storage capabilities. And it's very attractive to a lot of companies because it allows them to basically pay as you go, right? If you're a small company, especially startups, and you're looking to build this new, you know, the Facebook V2 or whatever it might be, you know, there's a huge capital cost that turns out to be very challenging to overcome, and especially these days. And so this gives companies a way to do it, you know, to basically say, look, you know, we don't need to have our own data center. We can rent someone else's and just build this thing and get it going, and our costs will simply go up as we require more computation and more bandwidth.
So I'm betting that some of the people on the call have just never seen this before and are kind of hearing this with dread, saying, oh, a whole new developer, a paradigm, a whole new set of things I have to learn.
Yeah.
So I think probably the most important thing we need to show people right off the bat, if you want to share out your desktop, is
sure,
show them how we've tried to allow them to leverage skills that they have, because I know whenever we announce something big and major and new, that's generally the first thing we hear from the developers.
Yeah, so one of the coolest things about Windows Azure and the whole move towards the cloud, at least from Microsoft's strategy, is that it's just .NET. So everything that you know as a .NET developer applies in the cloud. So if I come in here to Visual Studio and create a new project, you'll notice that there's some new project templates in here, and these come with the SDK, which I'll show you how to get here in just a second. And so if you come in here, you'll find cloud service, cloud workflow. These are different types of project templates that you can use to build a .NET solution for the cloud. So let's say I'm going to build a web and worker cloud service here. Let's just do a web cloud service for this example. Let's go ahead and create this thing. Gives me a Visual Studio project. And it looks just like any other ASP.NET application. Notice we've got a default.aspx. We've got a web page here. I could come in here and put in an H1, just say hello cloud. And everything else is the same. It's just typical .NET. The difference here is there's kind of some configuration files that tell, that basically make it possible to run this thing in a cloud environment. So this is basically controlling how this thing is going to run in the cloud. But it's just .NET. It's just .NET code. And so you can basically build these things in Visual Studio. You can write code like you're used to writing it. And then when you're ready, you can test it as if it were in the cloud. And this is the really sweet thing. Watch what happens when I do F5. I'm going to press F5 here to run this thing. And it's not going to be running it in a typical sense, like within a process on your machine. It's actually going to run it within a cloud, virtualized cloud platform on your desktop. So that Microsoft has basically packaged up the cloud and built it into Visual Studio so that you can test your applications on your desktop and debug them like you are going to want to. So this is the development fabric. This is basically the virtualized cloud platform. And I can click on this thing, drill into it. You got a little place here to see events that are written out or exceptions that are thrown. It's kind of like a little console window that gives you a view into this particular process. And then I've got my Hello Cloud page here that just ran within that environment. Notice the port it's running on. That is mapping into a process within that development fabric. So that's a simple Hello World cloud application running on Windows Azure. I can now easily just push this thing up into the cloud, into Windows Azure, and run it up there just like I did on my desktop. So there's full fidelity between the two environments.
Wow. I think that's a really huge point, is that you don't have to learn a whole new IDE, a whole new method of development. It's Visual Studio, it's .NET, it's pressing F5 to run it. Of course, you're introducing the concept of the development fabric, but it's what you know. You just have to kind of get used to it.
This is huge, very, very significant. I completely agree with you because this is where Microsoft has the advantage over the other competitors like Google, Amazon, all the big players in the cloud space, is they have the development story, right? They have the development tools. Mm-hmm. And that's what Microsoft's known for. That's what developers love about the Microsoft platform. And they have made it possible to take all that stuff that we love and they've made it applicable to getting traction out into the cloud. And the other places don't do that. Like if you go use Amazon stuff, they provide some simple REST APIs, a few simple SDKs, and you're basically on your own. It's a lot more cumbersome to get up and running. Same thing with Google. You're tied to one language. You have to write things in a very constrained way. And in .NET, basically, you've got the world at your fingertips.
Yeah, you have a foundation, and you're just bringing in the libraries into Visual Studio and coding against them.
Yeah, and it's a very comprehensive strategy, very comprehensive story on the Microsoft platform.
So
the Windows Azure piece is just kind of the foundation.
So how do you this looks great, but how does the developer get this? How do you get started to get your hands on those projects for Visual Studio and such?
So basically what you want to do is browse to Azure.com. If you just go to Azure.com, you'll be taken to the Azure landing page here. And notice it says Azure Services Platform. And there's a whole bunch of learning material here on the site. This is kind of the main place you want to go to find out anything about the cloud stuff on Microsoft's platform. And, depending on what kind of developer you are, you might want to drill into one of these areas, and they'll kind of target, information specifically for what you like to do. But if you just want to dive in here and explore around, you can kind of see the main pieces that make up the Azure Services Platform. So we call, Ray Ozzie called that thing Windows Azure. What is that? Well, that's just one piece in kind of the overall comprehensive strategy. You can think of the Windows Azure platform as essentially the foundation or the fabric that all of your cloud-based applications will run on. That's why we think of it like Windows in the cloud, because it's really just the operating system primitives that we're going to need to run stuff up there in those Microsoft data centers. And the two big things that it provides are computation and storage. So basically, you can run apps up there on their servers, and you can store data in their databases. And then on top of that, you've got a bunch of other services that are going to be applicable to you as a developer. There's the suite of Microsoft .NET services, which consists of three big pieces: access control, service bus, and workflow. And we're going to spend a lot of time looking at these in some of the demos, because this is really, you can think of this piece as your .NET framework for the cloud. Mm-hmm. Right, just like a .NET developer uses, you know, the .NET framework today as building blocks for building .NET applications, if you're building things in the cloud to target the Windows Azure operating system, you're going to use the .NET services framework for most of that, those building block components that you need. And then if you want to do more advanced database storage, you can use the Microsoft SQL services, so basically SQL Server in the cloud. Windows Azure does provide storage, but it's very simple storage. Kind of think of it more like a file system like storage, whereas SQL Services is more like a rich database where you can do queries and store, you know, semi-structured, structured data, unstructured data, whatever you want.
Yeah, blobs, tables, stuff like that.
Exactly.
And I just have to jump in here since, you know, BI is kind of my area. We did announce at PDC that we are doing work. We haven't announced any alpha or CTP release or anything, but to move our BI portions of SQL Server into the Azure platform as well.
Which is great.
Yeah, we are doing work in that area. No product releases, but it is our vision to move all the functionality or a great majority of the functionality available in the SQL Server product family into the cloud, which
great.
To me is tremendously exciting.
And that's your next book, right, Lynn?
Don't say, it's just like talking about having another baby right after you just had
exactly.
You can't go there. Yeah. So the last piece here that I'll talk about at least is live services. This is kind of the higher level things that are a little more focused on application centric things like storing contacts, directory services, you know, mesh. This is where the mesh stuff fits in. There's a whole suite of services kind of in this space that you can use for different kind of application-specific things that you're trying to accomplish. So, and then there's a bunch of other stuff that is building on top of this platform, like SharePoint services. They're building some pieces on top of this stuff, as well as Microsoft Dynamics, and I'm sure there will be many more to come. So, as you can see, it's a very comprehensive strategy by Microsoft.
We have a question in the queue that kind of relates to the parts and pieces, and I think it will probably lead into your next demo pretty nicely. It's from Mark, and he says, so what do I do with my SQL databases? Can they be migrated, I think he means directly, into the cloud?
So you want to take your existing SQL databases and push them up to the cloud.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting question. One of the biggest... So to answer that specifically, no, you're not going to be able to take your existing databases and just kind of push them up to the cloud as is. That will require some work. There's different strategies around how you could potentially do this. And I think this is one of the most sensitive areas around, you know, why, you know, that worry people about moving to the cloud, which is why this gentleman probably asked the question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do I do with my data? Do we trust Microsoft with all of our data up there in the data centers? I want to have it locally too, you know. So synchronization, I think, is going to be key in terms of, you know, being able to have data up there, be able to get it back down, and have some confidence in that. So Live Mesh kind of fits in as well as some of the synchronization capabilities in SQL Server and SQL Services will address some of those issues. You know, but in general, you're going to have to make decisions about where the data lives and, you know, if you do trust having that data up in someone else's data center. I personally think those concerns will go away as more people become comfortable with this concept. You know, it's not a lot different than what's happening today with in a lot of other environments, like with Salesforce.com or just different email providers, and you know, there's a lot of data that we trust other people to have in their systems, and so it's going to be interesting to see how this evolves. But you know, in terms of figuring out how to get your data up into the cloud, you're going to have to first pick: do you want it to live in the Windows Azure storage system or the SQL Services storage system? And then you're going to have to develop, you know, some code around how you get that data in and out of that platform.
Yeah,
one of the key things to realize is that this is a platform. It's a platform for us to build on. It's not basically a pre-canned application like a Salesforce.com.
So I have that kind of leads into the two main questions that I hear a lot when talking about Windows Azure is, you know, Microsoft has a lot of existing, really good technologies that our customers have, you know, really heavily invested in, such as, you know, Dynamics, SharePoint, BizTalk, all the good stuff. And I know at PDC they talked a bit about moving those to the cloud and some of the services available there, as
yeah.
you can see in the list on the screen. But, you know, how are they going to play well together? And
yeah, great question.
Yeah.
So on-premise versus cloud, right? And obviously, for a small startup who's just starting Greenfield, this is a great opportunity to just start building stuff up there. But for a real enterprise or any real corporate environment today where you've got millions of dollars invested in systems and you know hundreds of developers, you're not just going to you know move one day to the next to this new environment. There has to be some way to integrate the two. And that's where one of these pieces really fits in nicely. Do you guys remember BizTalk services?
Mm-hmm.
You guys remember that?
Yeah.
So that is now .NET services. A lot of people don't realize that, but that just kind of went away. They stopped using that name. It's now called .NET services. But this is basically the same thing that those guys were building, and they were very, very much, in a lot of ways, the pioneers around some of this thinking. But you'll see here they've given us some of the building blocks around building kind of an enterprise service bus capability up in the cloud through what they call their service bus fabric, as well as workflow services, as well as their access control service. And these pieces together basically give you a way to integrate between on-premise and cloud-based solutions. If you look at the service bus icon right here, you'll notice that you know it's showing you know this is about connecting information between two different things. And when you start thinking about putting code up into the cloud, the biggest problem you now face is how do I now communicate back down into my corporate environment, back down into my on-premise enterprise service bus or my on-premise BizTalk server or whatever you have running locally that you need to talk to. Because now you got to get back through the firewalls, the NATs, you know, all the mm-hmm. complex networking layers that may sit between you and the piece of code running within your domain. And so that's where the service bus comes in. It basically gives you a communication channel that allows you to bridge these two different worlds. So you can think of it a lot like an enterprise service bus built for cloud scope.
Can you,
so
you have any?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you have anything that you can show us as a code example? Because I think for some people listening, this might be a little bit abstract. You've been working in this environment for a long, long time, and kind of put your developer hat on when you just started working with the whole world of BizTalk and Service Bus and all that. It's you know it's a lot.
Yeah,
lot to take in. And now we're throwing it in the cloud.
how about we do a simple example here?
That's a great idea.
And I'm going to create a little Atom service for my machine. We'll call this a geek feed. And I just used a project template that comes with Visual Studio 2008. It's part of, you know, it basically uses the new WCF 3.5 APIs around REST and Atom to create a feed.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll see here I've got this little feed, and it's a library. So I'm going to need a console app now to host this thing. So I'm going to go ahead and add a new project to this. I want to use a console app as opposed to a web app because I want to be able to show when messages are coming in within that console so people can actually see them. We'll just call this my host. And then I'm going to come in here and add a few references to this thing. I'm going to need the system.serviceModel assembly. So I'll grab that one as well as the serviceModel.webAssembly. That's where all the new REST stuff lives. And I'm also going to need a reference to my project that I just built, the GeekFeed project. Okay, so I've got this service in here called Feed 1 that I want to expose to the rest of the world. And I'm going to do that here inside of this console host. And so I'm going to use this class called the Web Service Host, bring in the namespace. And the type of the service is Feed 1, right? And then we'll just say host.open, and then we'll do a console dot right line and say host is running, and then we'll do a console.read line to pin it open, and then we'll just do a host.close once they're done. So this is my simple host program here. Now, I need an app.config file on this thing. I'm just going to grab this one from up here and drag it down. This tells it how to basically host this service. And so this is going to be the base address for it. I'm going to make it 8080 geek feed. Okay, and notice we're using the web HTTP binding. That makes it RESTful. Notice we're exposing iFeed 1 here. I'm going to take out this address too. This is where we'll just use 8080 WAC geek feed for the full address to this thing. Okay, and that's basically all I need to do. I don't even need this behavior down here. I'm going to take this out too. I'm just kind of cleaning things up. This is really a simple example. Okay, so with that in place, let me jump over here. Did I take that out? Take out the behavior configuration I just deleted. Okay. So with that in place, I should be able to run this thing and host this. Let's set this as the startup project and do a control F5. Got some build errors. Let me fix those. I need to bring in the using statement for that guy. Okay. It's up and running now. Okay, so to test this thing, I should be able to just browse now to localhost 8080 geek feed, and notice we got our sample feedback, an item. That's pretty fun. Yeah. Okay, so I've now got a REST service that we can talk to over HTTP at this particular address, but we got a small problem. This is running on my laptop. And I'm running on a home network here, you know, behind a machine firewall, behind a NAT, and behind whatever firewalls my Comcast provider is using. And so the question is, how could you guys out there in the world listening to this show, you know, browse to this service? This is a very difficult problem. And if you think about code running up in the cloud, they've got the same, that has the exact same problem, right? If you've got services or applications running up there, and they need to talk back down to components running within your enterprise environment, is basically the exact same deal, right? Mm-hmm. So this is where the service bus comes in. With the service bus, we can now, you know, make it possible for you to hit this service running on my machine. And let me show you how easy that is to do in code. Basically, with the service bus SDK installed, all you need to do is change the binding you're using. Instead of using the web HTTP binding, we're going to use the web HTTP relay binding. And then up here, instead of using this address, I'm going to use an address that makes sense on the service bus. Now let me bring up my, it looks like I shut Internet Explorer. Let me go back to Azure.com real quick, just so you can see what that looks like. If I jump out here, and I go into the Azure portal, let me sign in, go into the .NET services area, and I'll sign in to manage my services. Here's where you can go in and kind of configure the service bus with different things. I'm going to go in here and configure, I'm going to be using the Sconnard solution. I'm going to go into the service bus. And this shows you what the endpoints need to look like for my particular solution. Servicebus.windows.net, WAC services, WAC Sconnard, WAC service name. So I'm going to use this address. I'm going to grab that, come back here to Visual Studio. Oops. I apologize. My finger just slipped. And I'm going to replace this bad boy with that. And I'm going to call this GeekFeed. Okay? Now, if I'm going to make it possible for you guys to hit this out there in the world, I'm also going to need to, you know, do some security configuration on this thing to make it so you guys don't need to authenticate with the service bus. So I'm going to add this little binding configuration that basically sets the relay client authentication type to none. So if you guys go hit the service bus to talk to my service, you're not going to be authenticated. Okay, so I just need to basically add that in here as my binding configuration. Change this to binding configuration. To default, save that, and now let's go ahead and run this. Now, when I run this, you'll notice I'm being prompted for a Windows card space card because my service is now authenticating with the service bus. So the service host in WCF is trying to open up a connection.
Hey, Aaron. We're not going to see the card space. We've had this happen before because it's going to take over the desktop.
Yeah. Yes, I'm going to select it, send it.
Yeah.
I just selected my card.
Yeah, we believe you.
Send.
but we can't see it.
I could also do that with username and password. You can do it either way. You can do it with certificates.
Yeah.
But by default, it asks you to present a Cardspace card. So my WCF service just basically said, okay, I'm Sconard, and I want to go register an address up there in the service bus that's going to be routed back down to my local service running on my desktop, the thing you're looking at right here in the console app. So now anyone in the world should be able to browse to that address, that public address, which was servicebus.windows.net, WAC services, WAC Sconard, WAC Geek Feed. Let's try to hit that, and notice we got the feedback. So when I sent that request from IE, it actually sent a request up to the service bus. I didn't have to authenticate because I turned it off in my config file. And then it relayed that message back down through a connection that it has with my local service. And so if anyone out there in the world listening to this wants to type in this URL, you should be able to hit my service.
Okay, I think we need to incent the audience now because they're just kicking back, having their lunch. What Aaron just said is if you type in this URL, you can hit his service. And you got any T-shirts?
But wait, yeah. Okay, before we do that, we've got to put a little bit of code in here.
Okay, sorry.
Let me do a little console.write line.
Okay.
Right here.
It can show.
And we'll say user, and we'll print into this the web operation context dot current dot incoming request dot user agent. Okay, we'll do that so we can actually see. Let's run this thing again. Yeah, I've got a couple of T-shirts. So, I'd be willing to snail mail a few T-shirts out to people if we can get anyone. Oh, my gosh, look at all those people. Holy cow.
I can't see.
It's
there you go.
Yeah. Watch out for what you wish for, huh?
I don't know if I have that many T-shirts. And I don't know how we can track back who that actually came from. That was a very smart test. But yeah, very cool indeed. So the people in the audience are now able to hit my service running on my desktop here behind all these, NATs and firewalls and all that nasty stuff that's really hard to traverse in the real world by simply changing the binding in WCF. It's very, very simple.
Now, I know I have Blue Badge, but that rocks, okay?
It really does. I have to agree. and this, I think, is where Microsoft has the strategic advantage.
Right? Yeah.
Because of the .NET platform, the development experience that they provide just in terms of .NET in general, and the ability to now, transform that out into the cloud and connect the two worlds, both on-premise and, software as a service, it's a real comprehensive strategy, which we're in the very initial stages, and a lot of this stuff is very limited right now, just for a simple reality check. But, there's a bright, bright future ahead. I'm really excited for where a lot of this stuff is going.
Cool. Well, there's a good question in the queue. I think Lindsay was going to take it. So you want to ask Aaron that question, Lindsay?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the question in the queue is a little bit different, but he's talking about Microsoft BPOS, if you heard about that, Business Productivity Online Suite, which has things like Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Live Meeting, Office Communications Online, and such.
Right.
Now, that's Microsoft hosted solutions. Do you know anything about how that's going to transition or work with Windows Azure, since it seems to be kind of a naturally progressive move to the cloud?
Yeah. I don't really know a lot about those individual offerings specifically, but obviously as Microsoft moves more in that direction, all of their hosted solutions, right, that people pay for are most likely going to end up in the, running on those same data centers, and everything's going to be kind of unified into that same model.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the specifics around how each one of those are going to migrate, and I would assume that each team would have to make those decisions independently of the other teams, right? I mean, when you have paying customers, one of the things that you have to be really careful about is making sure their stuff continues to work and things don't go down. And so I would expect a lot of migration to happen because, one of the things that I think PDC forced Microsoft to do as a company was to kind of realize that, geez, we got all these different organizations, all these different divisions, all kind of doing similar things, moving in this direction to more of a software as a service model. And we've got to have kind of a unified strategy as a company. And it kind of acted as a forcing function in a lot of ways to get everyone on the same page. And so I think you'll see a lot of unification around these different things over the next year especially. Even today, just kind of the difference between Windows Azure and SQL services and .NET services, you can tell once you really dig into it that they were kind of all built by different teams and that now they're being unified, right? And so I think you're just going to see more of that. But hopefully as an end user, right, if you're using one of those hosted solutions, you're not going to experience much impact, right, because things should just keep working.
Definitely.
Right. It's a much different approach than using this stuff that I'm talking about because this is more of a platform piece, right? You're going to write code to use this. So as things change, there's more impact on you, right? If the APIs change, if the model changes conceptually, you're going to have to go back and rework things. But using those hosted solutions, you're just kind of an end user. Hopefully,
you won't see a change.
Won't see it. You won't feel it.
Okay, so I think one of the elephants in the room, and certainly in the room whenever I talk about Windows Azure and cloud computing, is security. You know, if I'm sending all my data, if I'm having my application hosted in the cloud, you know, what kind of security assurances do I get from Microsoft or other companies? And, you know, how is that? I might have a bunch of requirements to keep me compliant with certain standards, you know, really where does it fit? I want to know, since I'm used to controlling my data and knowing where it is and all that good stuff, it's hard for me to let go of it. I get that question a lot.
Why did you have to bring that up? Everyone.
I'm sorry. It was going so well.
You know, it's like things were going so well with this talk until you had to bring in security. Security is nasty, right? And especially in this space because of the threats and because of the trust factor. I think the biggest issue is one of perception. It's one of trust.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft is going to do its very best to protect everything that you put up there and to, you know, their business depends on it. You know, I was talking to one guy about this once and he had a really interesting observation about this. He said, look, if you're going to trust a company to like host all your data and stuff, are you going to host a company that sells ads, one that sells books, or one that sells OSs? Right?
Oh, that's an interesting point.
And you know, I mean, Microsoft has years and years and years of you know, engineering effort, you know, built into all this. And this is really a convergence of a lot of different things kind of all happening at once. And there's a lot of smart people working on this problem and thinking about all those issues. Microsoft as a company is moving directly towards claims-based and federated security, which is a huge move, great move for the company moving forward, which gives, you know, companies more control over who they trust and how they're going to, you know, what identities they want to, you know, work with in their applications. And it's just a much simpler model to build code around when you start dealing with claims instead of the more traditional approaches. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of advances happening in terms of the development story, as well as what Microsoft's doing on the back end to protect the data, as well as you know, what you'll be able to do yourself through the .NET framework to build in your own protections if that's not enough. But I think it all kind of comes back to this, you know, trust factor, and I think that will hold a lot of companies back for a while. And some companies, you know, if you've got very strict compliance, you know, things that you have to deal with, you may not be able to move here, right? It just may not be possible. You may not be able to have enough control over the environment to meet some of those regulatory, you know, constraints that you have to adhere to as a company, right? So it may not be for everybody, and I'm the first to admit that. There are definitely a lot of cases where it makes a ton of sense. If you think about what we just did at Pluralsight with our online training model, this was a perfect approach, using the cloud to host videos instead of building our own little data center for all this, you know, streaming all these video things. It was a perfect way for us to get up and going with these types of things.
So, Aaron, to be clear, you've got production stuff up in Azure for your new training?
No, not yet on Azure. We're working through the details around that right now.
But it's your intention to do that?
But our intention is to do that. And
that's
we
awesome.
Have, yeah, we do have stuff running up in the cloud, but just not on Windows Azure at this point.
Okay.
The problem is Windows Azure wasn't ready when we started doing our work.
Yep.
So we were actually using a different vendor at this moment, but we would like to move over to the blob storage mechanisms and a lot of the capabilities built into Windows Azure once we can, and that will probably happen this year.
And that leads me to a question that I get asked by developers about all this stuff is, how do you make these data storage decisions? You know, we kind of had it earlier with the person asking about the direct port of the SQL database, but given what we have today, and since it sounds like you are actually thinking about this from a production situation for your own app, how are you making the decisions about what type of data storage? Are you going to go with SQL services? Do you feel like it's not baked yet? Are you going to use native Azure storage? I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I think it will be very valuable for our listeners to hear this.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think part of the story is still shaking out,
mm-hmm.
which is why it's kind of difficult to answer. But
yeah.
But the way I think of it is this. If you're thinking about just sticking data up somewhere that people are going to download, you know, then the Azure blob storage mechanisms is plenty.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The stuff that's built into Windows Azure is basically just simple storage for, you know, doing CRUD-style operations. So
you don't have a demo on that, do you?
I don't,
okay,
unfortunately.
Okay. No problem.
My Azure token isn't working right now, so I'm kind of hosing all the Azure stuff, which is why I'm doing that stuff on my desktop. But
oh, I see. That's in the SDK, though, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, yeah, you're right. There is stuff.
I don't have
a demo prepared on that one right
yeah.
now, but
yeah.
you're right. You can. In fact, if I come down here and let's see if that's actually there. Yeah,
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
I thought. No, it's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. When you do download the SDK,
yeah.
you do get the whole storage mechanism on your desktop as well. So
right.
it's truly a virtualized environment. So you see they've got blob storage, queue storage, and table storage. And that is accessible right here within my desktop, so I could do that. And there's a bunch of samples in the SDKs if you want to peek into those. But the way I think of it is this. I think of the Windows Azure storage as basically CRUD-style operations and where you don't need queries. And that's kind of – queries is really kind of, I think, the determining factor between whether you stick with Azure storage or
mm-hmm.
you go with SQL services. And I think cost may be another factor, and we
yep.
don't really know those details yet. So
yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well,
you know, there's going to be overlap between the two, for sure.
I know you said you had a few things to show us. Do you want to switch
yeah.
to another
let
demo?
Let me show a few other things.
Okay.
I really like the service bus piece in particular because of the, you know, it really addresses all the issues between on-premise to up
yep.
in the cloud. And so I wanted to kind of show you a few other aspects of that one real quick, and then I wanted to show you a quick workflow service if we have time.
Yeah.
Let me show you a quick multicast example. Okay, so let me bring up this sample here. This is also using the service bus. If I show you the code, it's basically just a little chat application, kind of like a news, what is it called, a chat group. What were those things called? An IRC.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Why can't I think of the name? I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to run one of these things, and I'm going to call this thing Geek, and type in my solution name. That's my solution name up on the service bus. Then I have to type in a password. Let me go copy that and bring it over here. And then I'll type in a name. So when I run this thing right now, it's actually going up to the service bus and it's actually creating a listen endpoint on that service bus saying, you know, I want to listen at this particular address. I just picked an address up on the service bus for this chat room. And then other people can go do the same thing. So I could actually run another instance of this thing. And we'll call this Geek. And we'll solution name is Sconner, that's my username, paste in that password again, and nickname we'll put in Lynn. And this will do the exact same thing. And we could keep creating these things. You can have as many listeners as you want. So here I've got two listeners
mm-hmm.
listening on the same URI up on the service bus. And then I can just start typing in messages from one And it's going to send it up to the service desk and have it multicast it back down to all the listeners, right? And so you really have a pub-sub model in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you don't actually need things like BizTalk server to do this kind of thing necessarily moving forward. This is one of the reasons why this was called BizTalk Services, because there's a lot of similarities between the type of infrastructure you're seeing here and some of the stuff that's built into BizTalk server as a product. So that's kind of a cool aspect of this. You can do one-way messaging. You can do pub-sub. You can do even direct connections. That's the other aspect I wanted to show you about the service bus real quick. Let me close this sample and jump down here to direct.
You know, we're going to call you Aaron, service bus. It's Connard here.
This is the part that, as a dubstep developer,
which is
really where I come from, this is the part that's most exciting to me. Check this one out. Okay, so do you guys know, you know, like, we all use IM, right? You ever send files through IM?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you guys do that, have you ever noticed that when you start to, if you're, like, sending a 5 megabyte file over the wire to one of your friends, it starts out kind of slow. And then maybe about, you know, 30 or 40 seconds into it, sometimes it just all of a sudden starts to speed up and it's done like that.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever noticed that?
Yeah.
So what's happening there? You know, the chat applications were kind of the inspiration for these relays. I mean, there are a lot of applications out there that use relays like the service bus is using. What they're doing is they're basically negotiating a direct connection between your two machines. Mm-hmm. So first, that information is all being relayed up into the cloud and then back down to the other guy, right? And so the trick they use is they basically, the relay sends messages back down to each of your machines to probe, to see which ports are going to be open next on your NAT. And they're basically just guessing.
Yeah.
But if they can guess right, they can then use that information to tell both of you what you need to know to establish a direct connection. Does that make sense?
Yes, that definitely makes sense.
So that's what's happening here with the service bus. They offer this feature. So let me type in my solution name and select my card space card. And I'll do the same thing over here. And let that go. It looks like it's being slow here for some reason. Let's let that see if it actually will run. Kind of, oh, client stopped working. Something's going on. Here, let me see if let me just try running it again. Sometimes, you know, we're kind of in the early stages for a lot of this stuff, so sometimes things don't quite work like you would expect them to. Looking a little better this time. Okay, there it goes. So notice the size of the messages. That's how many messages we're able to send a second. Now look at the pause.
Yep.
And then 2,500. See that?
Yeah.
You know,
we are truly geeks because we're all thinking this is so cool. Okay. We're all looking at this console app, and you know, you're connecting with us. So.
So you just saw that little trick happen, right? I mean, it's a very cool piece that's just built in. All I had to do in this code to actually tell it that I wanted to do that. Was basically use the right binding, the net TCP relay binding. And I'm telling it that I want to use this hybrid mode, which tells it that, hey, if you can establish a direct connection, do it. If you can't, we'll just go through the relay. Right? So there's lots of cool things like that built into the service bus.
And so just taking a look at that example that Aaron just showed us, one question I get is, oh, look, how come I get that? Now,
okay.
That's one of the samples that comes with the SDKs, correct?
Yeah,
so
correct.
If you just head out to azure.com, there should be a link in the bottom right-hand corner, actually an image that says try it now. Maybe
yeah.
I can walk through this.
In fact, let me see if I can get back there. Sometimes it's hard to figure out how to navigate this site, but if I go back, I'm going to get out of the portal area.
You just go back to the home page.
Yeah. And I'll just so this one right here. Right now.
Yep.
Yeah,
right now on the right.
And then right here is the SDK you want to get. There's a bunch of different SDKs. So the Windows Azure SDK is the one you need to run that development fabric, the Windows Cloud on your desktop, that first demo I did. So you need that one for that along with the tools for Visual Studio. Then for all the service bus stuff I was showing you, And the workflow services stuff, you need the Microsoft.NET Services SDK. And then once you get that stuff downloaded and installed, if you go into Program Files, if you go into Program Files here and jump down, you should see a Microsoft .NET Services. Where is that thing? It's up here somewhere. Microsoft.NET Services, and then this is where all those samples are. Right. So Service Bus, if you jump into here, there's a bunch of different samples, and I believe the one that I just showed you is in the bindings area.
NetTCP.
NetTCP Direct. This is the one. So you kind of have to navigate around to find them, but they're in there.
And also, if you go back to the web page, once you download the SDK and do some things locally, you can register for the online pre-beta services, and you'll receive it. Not all of them. Some of them are very small registration pool. I think it's invite only for live services and such. But for .NET services, you can do and you've just connected. So you can register. They'll email you a token, and via Microsoft Connect, you can sign into that pre-beta.
Yeah, you really, once you get out here to Microsoft Connect, you won't see this page that I'm showing. The reason why it's showing me this is because I've already registered.
And you've already signed in, yeah.
Yeah, but you'll fill out a form here, and then that'll get mailed to Microsoft, and then once they, they're basically, provisioning a bunch of accounts every day, I think.
I think it's supposed to take 7 to 10 days for you
to get an account.
Yeah.
And one thing we should highlight probably is that the accounts are different for the Windows Azure stuff versus the .NET Services stuff. So you actually need a separate invitation token for each one of those. If you jump back here and look at, I have full access right now in my particular example to all the .NET Services stuff. So if I jump in here and if you got an invitation code, this is where you would put it in. You would log in using your Windows Live ID, and then you use your invitation code to basically create what are called solutions within the Azure Services platform. Okay, and then once you're logged in, notice here I've got three solutions. You can kind of jump into these solutions and manage the different aspects of the .NET Services and SQL Services piece. But this doesn't actually give me access necessarily to the Windows Azure piece. Mm-hmm. If I jump back over here, notice here if I click on Windows Azure, this kind of takes me to a separate portal where I can kind of manage my Windows Azure solutions and deployment. And this is where it gets a little confusing. You know, if I wanted to create a new project here for Windows Azure, notice I can't actually do that right now.
Yeah, grayed out.
It's grayed out. So that's you know.
Well, in the remaining time that we have, we'd love to see workflow if we can squeeze that in.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. Let's do that.
Okay.
So let me jump back over to here and show you that I've got a workflow already put up here. Okay, so I'm going to jump into the workflow services piece. So when you think about workflows, the idea here is that we're trying to take a workflow that you would write with Windows Workflow Foundation, put it up into the cloud, and run it up there, and then maybe have it talk to services running back within our enterprise, going through the service bus, right? That's specifically how you would want to do that. So if I go in here to the workflow management console, you'll notice I've got a couple of workflows loaded here, and the way you add a workflow in is you just say add type, you give it a name, and you just paste the XAML right here, right? So let me actually bring up a workflow example here. If I jump back to my demos, my Geek Speak area, right here I've got this workflow service that's already up there. Let me jump into this one. This is actually one of the labs that come with the Azure Services Kit, which is another resource. So if you look at this cloud sequential workflow, you'll see it looks like just a regular, that's not the one I was thinking we were going to be looking at. I think I opened the wrong one. Let me just go.
Okay, well, while you're open, these are standard .NET 3.5 workflows, right?
Yeah, standard.
Yeah.
3.5 workflows. And what they've done is they've shipped a new set of activities. So when you install the SDK,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get some new activities that are designed specifically for the cloud, these guys. So okay. It's pretty limited right now. Basically, all you can do is send and receive messages and then basically pull things out of the messages that you get back. You can't really do much beyond that at this point, but you'll be able to do more later on. So this one just lets you receive a message from somewhere, and then it's going to receive an invoice is what this one's going to do. And then it's going to call back out to two other services, one to basically bill the order, bill the invoice, and then one to ship it. These two services are going to be running on my desktop. These are just WCF services. And they're going to be hosted up, exposed up through the service bus to the outside world. So see my solution name there? So in fact, why don't I just go ahead and run those services right now? So they're running, and they're exposed up in the service bus. Now, this cloud workflow, the way I got it into the cloud was I basically opened this thing up with an XML editor so I can see the XAML. That's the XAML right there. And I came over here, and I pasted it in right here. And then you just hit save. Okay, and that's how I got this workflow in here that I'm calling my workflow. Okay, and then if then what you can do with this is you can actually manage the workflow instances that are running up there. Right, so I can say I can actually create a new workflow instance, say, yeah, give me a new one. I'm going to have to authenticate at this point. Let me send my info card. Okay, and then I'll actually have a created instance which hasn't actually been started yet. So notice it says created, but it's not running. Then I can hit start to actually run it. And then I can go look at the details of this workflow and pull out the instance ID. Okay? That's what a client will need to send the message to be able to talk to this workflow in this particular case. So if I jump back here to my client, the one that's actually going to send the message, I'm going to paste that instance ID in right here. Okay? And my client is simply going to use an HTTP request. It's going to use the REST API to basically just send a message up to the cloud to basically submit an invoice to that workflow. That's what this code right here is doing. Okay, so now if I jump back over here and set this as the startup project, and I'm going to need all of you to cross your fingers. we're gonna bring up both these windows. And
I can do that demo in 30 seconds.
We'll press the enter key here and pray. And you know, so now the request went up there to the workflow in the cloud. Hopefully you got routed to the right workflow instance. It starts running, and then it starts sending messages down, you know, to my machine here behind my firewalls and everything. Okay, I'm getting an error right now.
But I mean, come on, you did it in like a minute. We get the concept.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and we are, believe it or not, at the top of the hour. These things go so fast. I could talk to you for 2 hours, 3 hours on this stuff. There's just so much great stuff in the cloud. Thank you so much.
No yes, problem. Thank you, Aaron. It's been great. And, you know, I think you're just beginning the conversation. So stay tuned for January's Geek Speaks. We have a few more talking about data services and live services, a lot of the components that Aaron has introduced today. We're going to dive a little bit deeper into them in the next few Geek Speaks.
Great, and we have additional resources listed here, and if you have questions, you can go ahead and put them in the queue. We'll get them answered, but thanks so much, Aaron, for being on, and I'm going to turn it back over to our producer at this time.
Thank you. If you have any questions for our presenter, go ahead and submit those now by using the Q&A pane. We'll be getting to those in just a minute. I'd like to remind everyone that you may print a PDF of the slides that are there, although most of the demo today, by clicking Control-P. You can either save or print the slides locally for your convenience. You should all be seeing a survey now in this slide area. If you can't take a moment to fill it out before you log off, we do appreciate any feedback you leave for us. All you need to do is follow the links provided to complete the evaluation. Now I'm going to turn it back over to Liz.
Great. Well, it looks like we don't have any more questions at this time. So we thank Aaron again for being on. And Lindsay, thanks for co-hosting.
Thank you. Thanks, Aaron, for joining us today.
Hey, it was a pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
All right. And with that, I'd like to extend a special thanks to Aaron Sconard, Lynn Lingett, and Lindsay Rutter for today's presentation. Thank you all for joining us today. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of today's conference.